Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 98. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, writer, speaker, and social innovator, Vicki Robin. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. It's exhilarating to catch up with Vicki Robin, the founder of the Simplicity Forum. Since I talked to Vicki upon the release of her then-new book, Blessing the Hands That Feed Us, Lessons from a 10-Mile Diet, she has had a political awakening. She has stood with the Native Americans at Standing Rock, protesting the construction of the XL pipeline and other actions. Since her classic with Joe Dominguez, Your Money or Your Life, 9 Steps to Transforming Your Relationship with Money and Achieving Financial Independence, she has written or co-authored numerous other offshoots. The updated revised edition of Your Money or Your Life, called Extreme Makeover, is scheduled for release in March of 2018. She actively posts on Facebook and at her soon-to-appear new site, VickiRobin.com. We talked, too, about her part in the local food summit, which launches August 6th. Sign up for the summit for limited free time access to over 60 stellar interviews with food system researchers, producers, and change makers. Here's Vicki, recently recorded. Vicki, the last time we talked, you had just written a book about eating locally. And I noticed now that you are involved this month, early August, in a local food summit. Can you tell us about how that came to be and how you're involved?
Yeah, right. Well, we picked up on that. Nice to talk to you. The local food summit is organized by a longtime colleague, Michael Brownlee, and his partner, Lynette Marie. And he is a large-scale systems thinker, also was involved in the transition movement. He started one of the first transition groups in Boulder, Colorado, and he was on the U.S. board with me. So Michael is an unstoppable force, super intelligent, reshaping our food systems around more local production for local consumption, not out of any sort of aesthetic values, but really because he recognizes that in the years ahead, when in this time of energy transition and now political upheaval, communities are going to be thrown back more on their own resources. We don't have to make a whole list of the reasons that this will happen, but I agree totally with Michael that it's time for communities to assess, you know, what supports their lives. You know, where does their food come from? Where does their water come from? Where does their energy come from? What are the systems to support young people, to support old people, to support people who are passing through troubled times? You know, we just need to be sort of more alert, especially now that the social safety net is under threat, to supporting ourselves as a community. And by the by, forming relationships that will be really our sort of informal safety net as we go through these times. So Michael has a passion for this, and so do I. And he has put together over 60 of the serious leading voices on relocalization of our food systems. And it's backyard, you know, yes, it's gardening, but it's way more than that. He has people talking about meat production, you know, like with carbon farming, grocers, systems thinkers. I mean, these are the leading luminaries. If anybody is interested in this question of relocalizing your food system, this is a summit to attend. The calls will, they're actually videos. The videos will be free, available to anybody for a few days, and then he'll be selling a package of, you know, access to the whole summit. So you have a incredible video library from the leaders. So yes, I'm part of it. I'm just one person. And my work here on Whidbey Island in terms of local food came out of a farmer friend of mine doing a calculation. I asked her, could we here on Whidbey Island survive from what we grow? Because it's a semi-rural island. It's got mid-island. It's got some particularly good farmland. And so she did a calculation, and we have a diverse culture. We're really red state, blue state, all in one island. And she said we could survive on what we grow here, given our current food preferences, what farmers will grow because they can make a profit at it, et cetera, for about 2 weeks in August. So that sent me on a hunt as an island for how do we improve that data. So I did my own experiment of eating within 10 miles of my home, wrote a book about it, Blessing the Hands That Feed Us, launched a project that I ran for 2 years called the 10-Day Local Food Challenge, encouraging other people to run their own experiments in their own communities and see what happened, because it was so transformative for me. And I will say that here on Whidbey Island, in this half a decade or more that I've been paying attention to these issues, we now have an organic farm school here. We have an institution that is a funding institution that's very interested in local food. We have lots of market gardeners. We have a farm table, incredible restaurant, farm fields, very successful. So I have been watching how a person like me, a citizen, can care about an issue, start to do personal experiments with an issue, start to network and organize around an issue. And you know, I can't take credit for anything really directly, but I can see that my attention, anybody's attention on a problem that needs solving, and supporting anywhere in the community that there is an inspiration to do something about it, you can actually grow your food system. We have a naval air station on the north end of the island, and I just learned that this idea of local food or local provisioning has seeped up to the base, and they are building raised beds on the naval air station. I have no idea what they're going to grow, how they're building their beds, et cetera, but the extension, Washington State University extension, has somebody helping them grow some food on the base. So we'll see. We'll see how this all goes. But it's an exciting, sustained focus for me. And if I think about the urgency of the issue, I can be distressed. But if I don't think about that it's urgent, if I think about the world is strange and unpredictable and everything is happening perfectly and in its own time, I'm thrilled to see what's happening here.
Well, now, Vicki, you and I met some 20 years ago when you established the Simplicity Forum. And out of the new Roadmap Foundation, which I think came out of your bestseller with Joe Dominguez, Your Money or Your Life. And since that time, that book has continued to influence so many people. And it started a movement called FI, or Financial Independence. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit about that. And I noticed recently that it's now called not just FI, but it's called FIRE, F-I-R-E. So can you tell us how that started and how it's evolved?
Yeah, well, as far as the Your Money, Your Life goes, I just did a thorough update, makeover of the book. And I'm calling it the ultimate makeover, meaning because it's going to be the last one I do at 72. I doubt that I'll be doing this again. And also, I believe that what I've woven in is a backstory that has always been implicit in the teaching, but never explicit. The teaching explicitly is a 9-step program to get out of debt, develop savings, track and evaluate the flow of money and stuff through your life, make sure that the money you're spending is buying you a life you love, stop doing stupid things in relationship with money, start doing smart things, and developing a values-based, empowered, personally generated relationship with money that is not a victim of your circumstances or the economy, but really takes that bull by the horns. And that book has become, actually, I didn't know this until this year, a cult classic in this movement, the FIRE movement, Financial Independence, Retire Early. And it's a global movement or trend or network or community of people who are determinedly unhooking from the 9 to 5 to 65 or 9 to 5 to 75 or 85 or, you know, 8 to 7 or whatever, you know, whatever, or, you know, having 3 McJobs or, you know, side gigs or digging or whatever the workplace situation is, you know, that work and spend treadmill, people are unhooking from it. So Your Money, Your Life was really an early inspiration for many people in that movement. So having done this makeover, I have re-entered the money work and discovered this global community. And I'm very excited because back in the day, we were more marginal. I mean, these are millennials. These are people who just realized for whatever reason on their own that chasing money is not worthy of their time and their lives. And so they're figuring out how to do it differently. And so this ultimate makeover, I think that the thing that is explicit that was implicit is this idea of financial interdependence, that the dream of financial independence is a dream of freedom. And it's really more like freedom from the grind. And not many people understand what it is freedom to do. You know, maybe it's freedom to get in my boat and sail around the world, or freedom to spend time with my grandchildren, or freedom to have a family. That is not as vivid. I think that what we don't recognize, that when people work through the program in Your Money, Your Life, they start to recognize that it's a relational world and that we are never independent of other people. We are never independent of the environment that we live in. We're never independent of family, friends, and community. These things undergird our lives. I mean, now that the social safety net is a little bit more under siege, we're starting to see what we've been assuming would always be there, you know, from Social Security and my generation forward, backwards, back to the younger people, have all grown up in the context of Social Security. Free education. You know, it's like things that we thought would always be there, public libraries, we're not so sure. So we're starting to understand, it's like when you try to explain to conservative economists that, you know, the trucks that sell your products run on the roads that were paid for by taxes, that there's a context in which we live that supports us flourishing. And the more that context is created, the more we have to scramble to make a life. So to pay attention to financial interdependence, to weave yourself into a community of places, I have here where I live, I think it's part of the ark, you know, like it's in Noah's Ark. That's the boat that's going to float us all, is neighborliness, sharing networks, and doing for one another, you know, all those funky things, community theater, all those ways that communities create to bring people together and to make life wonderful. We have an annual street dance in my town, and we just had that. It's like, 4 hours of dancing in the streets. It's wonderful. And that is part of, that's part of my financial interdependence. I had to create that kind of fun out of nothing because I was independent of everybody. I couldn't do it. So that's a big point. I talk about the ABCs of wealth in this new Ultimate Makeover. And A is for your abilities, the things you know how to do that you can do for yourself and save money, that you can do for other people and build relationships, that you can do for money and earn a little pocket change. And the more abilities you have, the more financially, more independent you are of the dominant financial system. And B is for belonging, is the people who really care for you and will show up for you, and you will show up for them. And often that's family, but that's not always blood family anymore because people are so mobile. But building these relationships, repairing the ones that have been degraded by resentments or upsets, and learning to forgive, learning to communicate clearly, learning to ask for what you need and not demand it. There's so many ways in which we can invest in that wealth called belonging. And honestly, if you don't belong to anyone, then you need a lot of money to make it through life. And then the third one, the C, is community. And that's what I was talking about. It's all the weave of nonprofits and social services and government services and infrastructure. It's the weave of people working together in a place to make that place viable. And it's also the weave of the natural world, and especially in the time of climate disruption, we need to think about where we are. And then S, the ABCs, that S, that little S that makes ABCs plural, is really your stuff, your money and things, the basic set of money and things that you have determined you need in order to have a foundation for your life that allows you to continue to learn and grow and give and have fun and enjoy your existence. So that's a big part of this ultimate makeover of your money and your life.
Well, I understand, Vicki, that you're hoping that book will be out by the end of the year?
No, I could have all the hopes in the world, but my publisher determines the pub date, and it is March 2018. I know from having written other books that seems a long way off, but it actually will come up fairly soon. I'm also will say that I'm now working with a millennial. One of the joys of doing this makeover has been meeting millennials who are smart, and free thinkers and doers, and I'm having a ball. And one of them has his own blog called Millennial Money. And he and I together are building a platform for Your Money, Your Life, where we're going to have free materials and also a fairly in-depth video course, a video workbook course for sale. And so I would encourage people listening to this podcast to go to yourmoneyoryourlife.com, our new platform, and sign up for the email list so that you can start to avail yourself of these resources as they come online.
Wonderful. Vicki, you and I have been working at Voluntary Simplicity for quite a while, and one of my goals is to convince people that simple living is not a hobby, that it really is a comprehensive lifestyle or way of life. And I noticed that there's this tension that some people think that simple living is just for their personal happiness. And yet you're proving time and time again that there's a very strong social justice component to simple living. I've been following you as you, for example, have been blogging from Standing Rock up in North Dakota. Tell us about that experience this last year.
It's an interesting evolution because I've always been a social innovator, social change agent, like messing around with innovations that can help people be more connected and have a smarter approach to life, a more grounded, maybe simpler approach to life. But I actually think simplicity is confused with easiness, and it's not easy necessarily. The simplicity is quite complex to pull off. So here on Ruby Island, I evolved to looking at local food and starting to work on our food system. And then I became aware that in the middle of the island where our best farmland is, and our best farmers, some of them, we have great farmers in the South End too, there is an old World War II airfield that the Navy uses for field carrier landing practice. This is like for these fighter jets that land on aircraft carriers. And these are the loudest jets in the sky. And what's happening is the Navy wants to expand the use of this little airfield. And meanwhile, since 1942, when they got the field, it's become a populated island, and it's right smack dab in the middle of the farmland. So the farmers told me, some of them said that if they expand that the use of that field, we're going to have to close down our farm. It's the biggest threat to farming on Ruby Island is the fact that we can't do that kind of small-scale farming field work underneath those jets. When the jets are flying, we can't be outdoors. Like a mother bear, I was like, no, this is our breadbasket. You can't have that. So I started becoming involved politically. And it is through this, just through that little doorway of trying to create a sustainable heaven on earth here on my little island, I started to realize that there are larger forces in the world that we have to address, because they have the ability, with a stroke of a pen or the spending of $1 billion, we have the ability to really crash our culture and our systems that we've carefully built up over time. So I've been studying this. I worked on a study with a leading economist on the impact of the Navy on our economy, because it's presumed to be 100% positive that we depend on the Navy, but in fact, this whole program is compromising the smaller scale, sustainable, long-term, locally owned businesses. So it was through the doorway of quote unquote simple living that I came to take a political stand, including my involvement with Standing Rock. But really, it's like, Standing Rock is everywhere. Now in my region, there's the fight against the Kinder Morgan pipeline. They've gotten clearance in Canada to triple the volume of the oil coming off of the Alberta tar sands. And that will be loaded onto tankers that will go through Puget Sound, Salish Sea, what we call the Salish Sea, and through the Straits of Juan de Fuca and out, shipped over to China. Every tanker threatens our fisheries. So if you want to have a lovely little, lovely little farming, clean water, you want to be able to eat the fish that you get from the shore. If you want that idealized simple life, you start to realize that there are large forces that are threatening it and that you have to pay attention. You can't just allow that industrial expansion and military expansion to happen in your place. We have a big fight going on now because the firefighting foam that's used by the Navy to put out fires, and jet crashes are major blazes. It turns out it's toxified some of the wells on the island. And so you can't drink the water and you can't eat the produce that's been watered by those wells. How pervasive it is, what the toxicity is, how we're going to fix it, this is all in play. And our community is, as I said, it's a red state, blue state, it's polarized because the citizens who are affected want the Navy to act quickly and to promise that, that they will fix what they broke, which is our water. And the Navy, of course, is a large institution that's accountable. Maybe, you know, it's accountable from the Pentagon. It's not accountable to us. So that's why, I mean, it's not that I had some out of the blue inspiration to work on this. I just find it more and more that the more I engage locally, the more the whole world is right here on my little island. And the issues that are, you know, like raging across this country like tsunamis are here, and they can be addressed here because we all live here. It's very difficult, very polarized, very nasty. But you, civil living, you can't put on blinders. You can, you know, like that old cartoon of like, you know, I don't know if I have to do anything. I'm not going to be here that long on this planet. So what? You know, you can't, I don't think that is actually ultimately possible. And you start with your little thing that you're trying to do, the, you know, using non-toxic cleaners in your household, and then you start to see all the upstream consequences, and it's hard to put the blinders on again.
Well, thank you so much, Vicki, for your continued inspiration and leadership. Just to repeat that the Local Food Summit is going to be available on videos online, but I assume that it's also a face-to-face event that people can attend if they're nearby?
No. It's 60 recorded videos. They've been collecting the videos for about 6 months. So no, there's nothing to attend. You just localfoodsummit.org. I think, yeah, localfoodsummit.org. Go online, sign up for it, listen live, you know, listen during the 2 weeks. And for free, or you can sign up and get the whole package for a minimal amount. So that's Local Food Summit. And then yourmoneyyourlife.com, please join our mailing list, be part of this community. It's going to be very exciting. Thank you.
And I understand that some other things that you have started are still going along. For example, there's been a discussion board, the Simple Living Forum, has been and continues to be a vibrant conversation.
Oh, great. Great. I haven't visited there in quite some time. But yeah, I've created a lot of things, and some of them have persisted, and some of them have morphed, and some of them have disappeared into the sands of time. And I think it's just a very rapidly changing time, you know, and so we keep innovating, we keep connecting, we keep seeing what's next, and we keep participating together.
Would you like to give us a preview? You say this is the ultimate makeover for Your Money or Your Life, but do you want to prognosticate about the next 10 years for Vicki Robin?
I think I will stay active. I have no idea in what regard. And I feel like I'm 72 now. You know, there's sort of a big fat permission once you're in your 70s to you could rest on your laurels, but that's not really what I would think I would do. I think I would like to, mostly I would like to partner with young people and create together what's going to make life better for them and for their community. However that happens.
Are there any activities that you're looking forward to coming up in Minneapolis?
First National Gathering of the people involved in the transition movement in the United States, Transition Towns, was initiated, really the whole pattern of it was initiated in the UK in Totnes, in Devonshire. Has like now spread around the world, and it's communities that are surveying, taking a systems approach to the flow of resources through their communities, and making concerted efforts, concerted and creative efforts to be resilient over the long haul. So I'm excited. I was on the U.S. board, and then I stopped that and did a few other projects, and now I'm going to go and see how the movement is growing.
Wonderful. It's so wonderful to see that you're still continuing to teach. I noticed on your Facebook page how you had taught recently at an ashram.
Yes, the Sivananda Yoga Ashram is a, Sivananda is a, one of the great spiritual teachers who brought yoga to the West. And they have ashrams around the world. And they have they're training people to be yoga teachers, and they're giving people also a lot of training on food and health issues. But the idea is that we are all activists. We are, you know, part of your activism is your mastery of your own body mind, but not just for the purpose of your own inner peace, it's for the purpose of peace on earth. So this ashram brings in leading thinkers to teach. This is the second time I've had the privilege of doing that. It's just, of course, it's, what could be better than swimming in a tropical ocean? But it's also wonderful to share from the many social innovations I've been involved in, principles of how we can all be change makers. So yeah, I just came back from NASA. I'm heading to the UK. I'm going to be part of the faculty for something called a Chautauqua, a FIRE, Financial Independence Retire Early Chautauqua. There's one in the UK in August, and then there's going to be another one in Ecuador in October. So this is my entering back into the what you and I used to call the simplicity movement, and this now called minimalism or financial independence or do-it-yourself or, the names keep changing, resilience, but the names keep changing, but it's the same sort of thing, people empowered to take the reins of their lives and make life better and more meaningful and more spiritually and socially enriched.
Well, thank you, Vicki. Anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
No, thank you, Jerry, and thank you for your steadfastness. Yeah, you've really done it. You really stuck with it, and that's amazing.
Thank you so much. Peace be with you, my friend.
Yeah, bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to my conversation with writer, speaker, and social innovator Vicki Robin. Hear our earlier conversation at Simple Living Works, episode number 17. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com or on our Facebook page or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click in window number 3. Also, it really helps our visibility when you give Simple Living Works a 5-star review on iTunes. My colleague Lee Van Ham's new book has been released. Lee is the executive director of Jubilee One Earth Economics. Entitled From Egos to Eden, Our Heroic Journey to Keep Earth Livable, it is volume 2 of Lee's trilogy called Eden for the 21st Century. I've read it and reviewed it and highly recommend it. Lee and I talked about volume 1, Blinded by Progress, and volume 2 on podcast. The links to those episodes are given in the show notes. Need a nudge? I've been producing today's Simpler Living Nudge for over a year and welcome you to subscribe for free. Receive it by email or Twitter. Just send me an email with a subject nudge at simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. I've received lots of interesting responses, which you can read on simplelivingworks.org. Click on Recent Comments in window number 5 or see the link in the show notes. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. If you're new to Simple Living Works podcast and would like more basic information, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember, you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscription to this podcast and to our weekly blogs are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share-alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We do not solicit nor accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All of our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everyone's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just public policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. As you may sense, we put a strong emphasis on social justice. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Janssen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. Simply so others can simply live, learn to live simply so others can simply live, learn to live simply so others can live.